Thank you. Could we have, is it possible to put up onto the screen for everybody's assistance, diagram 3A, and that you walk through that, Mr. Skelton, in terms of the stages as well? What number is that? 2A. Okay. Thank you. That's great. Thank you.
So Mr. Skelton, sir, Senior Transportation Engineer.
Yes, welcome, Mr. Skelton. We've heard a lot about you. We're told to wait for you to come. So,
thank you for that. I'm not sure that I was. It's wholly deserved. If I could start with start my summary, which will lead into probably an explanation of the site and the hub, because I think from yesterday it might help your overall understanding of how things working or how they might look
as
we're going forward. The concept design was developed to ensure the freight hub achieved Kiwi Rail's operational requirements while also managing effects. The key components of the freight hub that informed the concept design included the track work, marshalling and freight forwarding facilities, storage facilities, the building and structure height parameters and site access. The track work includes the relocated NIMT, that's the North Island Main Trunk, arrival and departure tracks, and the marshalling yard. There are also various tracks throughout the site servicing maintenance buildings, the container terminal, the log yard, and bulk storage facilities, and of course the freight forwarders. The tracks are integrated through the facilities to enable efficient loading and unloading of freight. Now, I think that leads into this particular plan, which we have shown on the screen. And to save me switching glasses all the time, I'll look at this plan and refer to the areas as best I can.
This is tab 2A, sir. Place. Someone's purloined my copy. Someone's actually finished on the floor.
I don't know where.
Commissioners, you go.
So we're on 2A.
2A, figure 142 on the bottom right hand corner.
Yep.
If I could lead you through the plan starting at the top of the page where it starts at Sanctus Road.
Yes.
You will see the first two top lines in black. They are the NIMT, the relocated NIMT, and space for a duplicate of that line. Mm-hmm. The next eight lines in green represent what is called the arrival and departure yards, of which the four nearest the NIMT are electrified, and the following four are just normal tracks. Now, the arrival and departure yards are nominally used for exactly that, the purpose that they sound like they've been used for, the arrival and departure of trains. It's not wholly used necessary for that reason, because trains can arrive and depart from other areas within the yard. In fact, rail yards are multivariate and functional, and it's often, sometimes you see it's personal preference how the operators use different roads. So whilst they have names in a design, they're not always used that way. Yes, thank you. Apologise. I use road in two ways. One is a roading engineer as a road, but in a railway engineer is a road as a railway track.
Yeah.
So apologise if I'm confusing you there. The next area is the marshalling yard, and they are generally shown in the red lines there, and I think there are 15 of those in general terms. And you'll note that the way the yards, with the way track work gets configured, they are they're sort of longer and shorter depending on how they fit and how they tie in to the connecting roads at either end. There are some miscellaneous track work, which are the sort of different green ones, and they are for broken wagon storage and other bits and pieces. So sort of holding functions so that if there's problems with wagons, they can move them out of the main area for service and put back into service and operation.
Would it be true that the longer the train, the more likely it is to arrive and depart on the green?
On the longer roads, yeah. for sure.
Yeah.
And the longer roads, all the arrival and departure roads in the yard will accommodate at least a 1,500 metre train.
Yeah.
They're in fact physically a bit longer, but you've got to clear that turnout point, which is a point of conflict within a yard.
Right. And is it quite an exercise to shape up a 1,500 metre train?
Sorry, I don't know if you're a microphone.
Oh, is it quite an exercise to shape up a 1,500 metre train?
Probably not. It's not something that the Kiwi Rail can obviously do right at this very point in time, not because of space, but because they don't have the mechanical hardware. The draw gear isn't up to that capacity yet. If you think about your private car, I mean, it's got a tow bar rating, and effectively the draw bar gear has got a rating on it, and it's got to pull the whole train. And they're in the process of working through that and upgrading the whole system to take the heavy loads.
So that's the male-female system that connects the two.
Well, different types of couplings.
Yeah.
The other side of that, of course, the longer the trains are, the overall heavier they are to pull, and the problem is less on the flat but more on the steep grades, and that's something that's quite dominant heading up through New Zealand, so they need more engine power as well. So those are issues that the Kiwi Rail have to do before they probably can bring in those lengths of trains. Mm. Currently they're dealing with 750 or something of that long, I think, and even they're a problem to assemble within the current yard. And they can still build them up, but they just build them up in pieces, and they aggregate one wagon into three or four similar wagons all going to a similar direction destination, and then connect them together right at the end, so they might do that on the main line. So that's the inefficiencies. So
there's quite a lot of double handling.
Yeah, a lot of double handling, exactly. On the picture now on the left-hand edge, you'll see the square building with the blue track work. That's the maintenance facility that maintains the engines, services them, and wagons. And it's got its own sort of combined access and facility, so it can pull trains off, get them into there for services. I think there's an under four wheel lathe in there, which makes the tyres, same as a car, but they're metal, round, so they don't have problems.
Yep.
Change brakes and such like.
Yeah, we saw a similar facility at the old, at the existing site.
Yes, that's right. It's exactly the same. The triangular, funny triangular piece there, of course, is to turn trains and or wagons around or engines around. You used to think of the old rotary thing. That sort of doesn't happen that often. if we go into the middle of the site now, that first two blocks is the container terminal and container storage area. It's serviced by trackwork, and of course, because it's a transfer location, there's roads, and containers are in are stacked in frames for the likes of the ones that require refrigeration or controlled conditions. So they stack them in facilities, in racks, effectively like storage racks you see in a big warehouse. Yeah. It's container-sized.
The actual containers are designed to be stacked in that way.
Yes, but these are not, they're stacked hard on, but there's also pedestrian ways and access in to plug them in and do such things to get at them. Yeah. You move into the, there's a couple of holding tracks or access tracks between, and then of course there's the freight forwarders, the principal freight forwarders, which are the first four buildings. And you'll see that there's a sort of a green, which I think represents a covered area. So the wagons can pull up, or they can offload the containers and draw them within, inside their facilities to unload or load, as the case may be. Between the major freight forwarders and the smaller buildings, again, there's the linking tracks, and I'll just talk about those in a minute. And then you've got the six smaller freight forwarders buildings. At the bottom on the left-hand end is the log yard, and that has two 450-long-metre tracks to hold wagons and or fill wagons. Now, I think the 450 is the typical length unit train that they take, and it's a limitation required, or sort of it comes from the Port of Wellington, in terms of what they can store on the wharf for unloading purposes. I don't think they can take longer in there. So the idea is that, of course, they can have either send one off, be loading up another one because they rely on truck transfer, or hold and receive an empty rake of wagons back ready for the preparation of the next load. Often shipping is a fairly continuous operation, and they hold as many logs on site, of course, as they can. But on occasion, I think they drag the stuff down as fast as they can from as far afield to keep the ship loaded and turned around. The ability in this yard of certain unit trains, and unit trains being single commodity freight, to be their own train exists, and the log yard is an example of that. And you can see that that track runs through between the two buildings, and if you follow it off out the southern end of the yard to head off mostly to the east coast of the North Island and to Wellington, those are the principal destinations for log traffic currently. As they leave the yard, and it's a very small little mark up by that sort of grey triangle where the water bore location is, there's a weigh-in motion wagon identification system for the end of the yard to pick up traffic leaving the yard going south. There's an existing one already on the NIMT in the north of the yard site, so it's not one required at that end. If I just move on to possibly help clarification on the staging or the staged operation of the yard, to understand what that means and how it gets applied. We've heard about the yard as an operation after all the construction activities in about 2030 or thereabouts. Stage one of the yard builds sufficient of the yard to allow KiwiRail to vacate Tremaine Avenue. So it provides sufficient facilities to take over what that operation looks like in 10 years' time on the new site. So in general terms, and I'm going to sort of work a little bit backwards now, so from the bottom of the page going up, what that might look like for this stage one. Stage one would build two of the minor freight forwarders buildings. So the bottom row of buildings, and you can say the right hand side. So a third of those. In terms of the major freight forwarders, it builds 50% of those buildings, so two of the four. The container terminal is built in its entirety. Moving to the left-hand side, the bulk tanks are not constructed. The log facility is constructed, but only one of the loading roads and just the normal holding roads that go with holding wagons. So half of that facility effectively. Working anti-clockwise, we've got the maintenance buildings, they would be built. The blue engine and wagon servicing buildings, they would be built. There is a small facility almost in the top northern corner of the site. You see there's a locomotive sanding and storage facility. That's where engines would, who are due to go out, who have got no other maintenance issues, would be dieseled, sanded, just as a bit of buy information, I suppose. Engines, I mean, you've got steel on steel wheels, and so that's very low friction. To improve friction, they sand. They drop sand out of it onto the track and between the wheels to increase the friction. So it's to help them sliding and skidding. So that's a thing of old, but still persists today. So that facility just does that and adds water and stuff for the engines. In terms of the track work's a tricky one. In my evidence, I've talked about that they have to relocate the NIMT. So that NIMT is relocated as at stage one, although the second main duplication is not done. The space there for it, but it's not built. All the arrival and departure roads are built. That's all the green roads are built for stage one. Whilst in the final fit out, they're called arrival and departure roads. For the stage one fit out, some of these roads become reassigned. And in my appendix four, I can't recall where it was, it might have been a response to 42A.
Appendix what?
It was Appendix 4, Stage 1 track work, it was called. I think it was in my response to the 42A.
I've got an Appendix A.
We'll just confirm here that document, because I think it was a response to one of the, actually it would have been a 92.
Oh, 92, sorry.
Ah, so in your 92. Ah,
yes, yeah, sorry.
Okay, so we'll go to that.
Jacob,
I took it out. I had it in there.
Is that attachment 3, response, design, construction and operations?
Yeah, there were three tranches of 92 responses.
So it's in the it's in the section 92 requests. It's tab 7, appendix 4.
So is that dated 28 May or 24 May?
It's 15 Feb.
It's 15 February 2021 yeah. response.
And attachment what?
It's attachment. It's attachment 3, appendix 4.
Yes, and it's got, looks like that, it's got some coloured pictures and lines on it. I probably thought it would be easier to reference with that rather than try and verbalise it all.
So it's volume 1, sir, the section 92 bundle, attachment 3, tab 7.
There, thank you. Right, thank you for that. That's good. I'll just note that reference. Right, worth you.
Thank you, and apologies for the depth of paper we had to dive into. So there is some correlation, obviously, between the plan and that table, at least from a colouring perspective. So it helps. So the figure four, figure 142, which is up on the screen, is really the stage 3 final configuration as defined on that table. So that goes through pretty much all the track work that's in the yard, as I've just talked you through. It assigns loosely names and numbers from a functional assignment within the concept of the hub. The stage one functional reassignment is giving us an idea of how the yard will be partially constructed for stage one and operate. So we're talking about not all facilities in place, and hence not all track work requiring to be in place, but sufficient track work to operate whatever's going on in the current site in Tremaine Avenue adequately, or more than adequately probably on this current site for a number of reasons. So stage one functional assignment is telling us that there are eight green roads, which are in the final set out rather than departure roads, will be built, but only two will be assigned as arrival and departure roads, and they'll be both electrified. So tracks 1 and 2 in the final will be built, they'll both be electrified, but in the concept of the interim operation we'll do electric and non-electric train functions as an arrival and departure yard. The remaining 6 tracks will be just reassigned marshalling functions for the interim stage. Now, you recall I said that they're infinitely variable and people can use them how they kind of want, and this is just an example of how that's happening on the site. And what that does is it allows the train management operations to be condensed into one part of the site where it's easily accessible from the NIMT, and they can still do their make-up and break-up operations, and the connectivity is just by the peripheral roads to the other areas like the container terminal and the freight forwarders' facility. So shunts within the yard can pick up those wagons and pull them around and then put them into appropriate marshalling area, marshalling being to order them in to make up or prepare them for going onto a train, or in fact directly onto a train of the sufficient wagons. They don't necessarily have to go into a marshalling facility before they go onto the arrival and departure roads either. It's a preference type thing, and it depends on how they're going. The more sorting trains can get at the origin, the easier it is to manage them at the destination. Once again, simplifying handling. If you muddle them all up, you muddle them all up, then you have to unmuddle them at the other end to make them onto new trains. You can see, in terms of the red marshalling yard, there are tracks 1, 2, 3, 4 and 5. I'll just check myself over the page. And 6 in the marshalling yard in the final 3 foot out are reassigned as ongoing marshalling activities. So they just remain the same. They've just got a slightly different number or identification tag for stage 1 facilities. Marshalling tracks 7 and 8 become the wagon storage, so that's just holding wagons. And the bad order, that they're just wagons that need a bit of work on, so they can routinely put a truck into the yard and access it and maintain it. And of course, where there's no the balance of the tracks coming down through the wagon storage are not built, so there's effectively at stage 1 a gap between the last of the marshalling track 12 or the bad order track on 8 with no track work. We might have the fat ground in place, could be topsoiled and grassed for some other use as a, you know, green space until it's required. So it's a hole within the yard with no track work on it, but obviously got an ability to put it. And then, of course, all the other track works coming down, intermodal receiving tracks and the CPAD bad tracks remain the same. So they're all the container terminal and those buildings that are going to be built. So I think, does that help you?
That's extremely helpful. Thank you. Essentially what you're saying is that in terms of my question around the lapse period, that in reality, by stage 1, the fundamental area, most of the area will have to be occupied in some form or other of the extent of the designation.
Yes.
To operate it.
Yep. I mean, you could almost say that the track work that's determining the perimeter extent of the site from an operational side will be in place at stage 1. There'll be some holes in the middle, that's all.
But it's not a case where, for example, someone who owns a site where the areas are identified for stormwater control can be left not acquired, because effectively at stage 1 you have to have all that infrastructure there.
I've talked about that, I mean, in my evidence that, I mean, I call that the sort of hub construction phase, after the bulk earthworks. And the bulk earthworks is the basic, I think you used the term to Mr. Mott earlier, levelling of the site. Everything that's below ground there, culverts, drainage, stormwater works, really needs to be in place for that.
Yeah, that seems...
And we would endeavour to get most of the site stormwater control underground systems in place at the same time. Or at least provide places where, I mean, buildings themselves will need stormwater control because of downpipes and roof runoff water. So we'd have connection points already established that they'd go to, I mean, because we can't guarantee we'll exactly get those right. But that all that subsurface work would be in place. So, you know, it's critical to do that, and even just to construct the site. There's so much work.
Yeah, that seems sensible. All right, well, that's probably a good moment to have a cup of coffee.
Thank you.
It's 11 o'clock.
Thank you. How long, sir?
Just 15 minutes, so come back at 11:15.